You know, all my life, I've been in the business of observing the world and writing or talking about what I see and experience. And one of the things I can tell you is that it isn't easy to communicate the truth with complete accuracy. There are always going to be small discrepancies between what you report and what actually happened. For instance, last week in a speech in Ohio, Donald Trump promised that if he was reelected president, he would stop China from undermining our automobile industry. And then he added, quote, "That's if I get elected. If I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath," unquote. The New York Times, a former newspaper, reported on the speech in a story headlined "Trump Vows Nationwide Slaughter If Not Returned to Power," in which Times reporter Prissy Credential wrote, quote, "Pushing his campaign rhetoric to unprecedented levels of violence, former President Donald Trump swore he would unleash a bloodbath on America if he was not reinstalled in the White House this November. An obvious threat to reenact the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the Capitol, the worst constitutional crisis since the Civil War of the 1860s, when 700,000 Americans lost their lives and Trump bathed in their blood. An unthinkably horrific act made famous by the 16th century Hungarian Countess Elizabeth Báthory, who imitated Trump by torturing and murdering more than 600 virgins and bathing in their blood. An act that inspired Bram Stoker in the writing of Dracula, which describes how Donald Trump would disguise himself as a coachman and ride out of the crumbling Trump castle in the dead of night, whipping his six sin-black Trump horses into a lather as he descended on innocent villagers, morphing from a billionaire real estate mogul into a gigantic bat in order to plunge his teeth into the throats of innocent and shapely women and drain their lives away while they lay helpless in his clutches if he is not reelected to the presidency. That's why in 2017, thousands of women took to the streets wearing pink hats and shrieking out of faces distorted by feminist rage to the point of repulsive ugliness in order to protest the 400-year rampage during which Trump fueled his soulless immortality with female blood, which many feminists consider not merely homicidal, but also sexist and racist in its privileging of blonde white women with large breasts nearly exposed by their open nightgowns so that the thick scarlet drool dripping from Trump's gore-soaked mouth could be seen by his demonic red eyes to be running in disgusting rivulets over their tremulous white flesh if he is not returned to office. Experts estimate that Trump's insatiable thirst for human blood, combined with the supernatural longevity of his terrifyingly animated corpse, may have resulted in as many as 200,000 deaths over the centuries, or about a third of those Trump would have slaughtered on January 6th if it had been the Civil War, which it was as bad as, thus leaving a body count of almost a million people in the bloodbath Trump is threatening if he is not returned to the White House, where he would impose a tariff on Chinese cars instead of murdering millions and bathing in their blood, unquote. Now, those of you who have journalistic training may have noticed that here and there, the Times reporting veered from absolute accuracy in order to convey a deeper impression of the intent behind Trump's words. Questioned about this journalistic practice, Times editor-in-chief, Blithering Prevarication III, explained, quote, "Blood, look, blood, blood everywhere, dripping, running, staining, oh God, mother, blood," unquote. Mr. Third's remarks were followed by a lengthy period of inarticulate sobbing, after which he became so upset that he vomited, which the paper plans to run tomorrow as its lead editorial. Giving a more in-depth account of the Times' impressionist reporting, Columbia School of Journalism professor Vladimir Mohammed, who holds the J School's Walter Duranty Chair of Intentionally Rampant Mendacity, said, quote, "America is simply going to have to choose whether it can endure seven more months of Trump and the horrific atrocities we're going to imagine he'll commit. And that's if he's not elected. If he is elected, it'll be a bloodbath." Trigger warning. I'm Andrew Klavan, and this is The Andrew Klavan Show. All right, we are back laughing our way through absolute hell on earth. I just heard just a moment ago that Kate Middleton, Princess Kate of England, has announced that she has cancer, which and is going to undergo some chemotherapy treatment. Sounds like they caught it in time, and we hope so, and we wish her the best. She is a very lovely figure who handles herself beautifully, and I wish her well. Please pre-order Against the Corporate Media. This is a new book, Against the Corporate Media, 42 Ways the Press Hates You, which is certainly a true story. It's edited by my fellow curmudgeon, Michael Walsh. I have an essay in there I'm very proud of, and so does Bill Whittle and Sebastian Gorka and John Fund, one of the great observers of the press, Mark Hemingway, Larry O'Connor, lots of really good people, Against the Corporate Media. It's not coming out for a couple of months, but you can order it now. Also subscribe to the Andrew Klavan YouTube channel, my personal YouTube channel, where you will get exclusive content thrown through your window, tied to a brick, just because we like doing that. It's just fun. It'll have all kinds of stuff. And the interviews that we do, we have an interview that comes out every Wednesday. It's available there. It's available on Daily Wire Plus. Everything's available on Daily Wire Plus. And also, of course, on the audio feed. Last week's interview was with Adam Plantinga, an excellent San Francisco police sergeant who has written a really good novel called The Ascent. And Abigail Schreier will be coming up this week with her, about her book, Bad Therapy, which I've read and which is quite interesting and really good and is already a bestseller. Also on YouTube, if you leave a comment and the comment is morally reprehensible, by golly, we will read it here because we want to be as morally reprehensible as anybody out there. This week's comment is from Zach Martin. He says, not even Klavan's grizzled gray beard stubble is as grating as Dylan Mulvaney's Days of Girlhood music video. I have to agree with that. I was sorry I played that, but it did make my eyes twitch and it was terrible. I still haven't gotten over it. I think I have PTSD. We all know cancel culture threatens free speech, but do you think social media companies are innocent bystanders when they hide your channel from search results for expressing the wrong opinion? That's censorship. Plain and simple, nobody should have the right to silence your voice. The good news is you can fight back by using our trusted privacy partner, ExpressVPN. The problem with big tech companies is that they censor what you see and track what you do online. They track what you're searching for, the videos you watch, and everything you click. They use this data to serve ads and can match your activity to your true identity using your device's unique IP address. When you use ExpressVPN, your identity is masked and anonymized by a secure VPN server that encrypts your data. And ExpressVPN makes it super easy. You're protected by just one tap on your computer or phone to turn it on. Take back your privacy at expressvpn.com/Klavan. You'll get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free by visiting expressvpn.com/Klavan. That's expressvpn.com/Klavan. There are no E's in Klavan. I just make it look that easy. So protect your data today.
There are no E's.
So listen, I had my show all written out and all planned, and then Jeremy, the God King of the Daily Wire, announced that the Daily Wire and Candace Owens have parted ways. And you will want to know, did I know this was coming? Yes, I did. And I knew it had come and hadn't been announced, but I didn't realize it was going to be announced moments before I came on the air. Someone posted on X, Candace Owens is gone, so now Andrew Klavan is the only black woman at the Daily Wire. And that's obviously true, so I feel a certain responsibility to talk about this. There's going to be an absolute crap storm, obviously, coming out of this, and we're already getting... Well, I looked on Twitter or X just before I came on, and every single thing that was trending was us. It was like Jeremy, it was the Daily Wire, it was Candace, it was all just going on, and that's going to continue for a while. And so what I'm going to do, because I just don't feel right just leaving it there and not saying what I think and where I stand, so you know, because that's what we're here to do. I think I'm just going to talk about it from every angle, because it has a lot of different angles that I want to talk about. And I don't know whether that's going to take me 10 minutes or it's going to take me the whole show. It's probably going to take me longer than I think. And so we'll interrupt it with commercials if you're not a subscriber, which you should be. But I'm just going to say everything I have to say. And because you listen to the show and you know me, you know I'm going to tell you exactly what I think, that no one can come in here and tell me what to think. Obviously, I'm not going to violate any confidences or anything like that, but I'm going to tell you what my impression about this. I can only give you my take, And I can only, you know, whenever anybody says to you, oh, he said this because of that, or they told him to do this or that, it's simply not true. I can guarantee you 100% that that's not true. So first, let me give you my personal point of view about this in terms of the people involved. I want to say that I am extremely proud of Jeremy, our God King. And he, people always say he calls himself that, but I called him that. I made it up to tease him and to keep him, you know, keep him steady and down to earth, but also to remind people that he, behind the scenes, had built this wonderful thing, which he, at that point, when I gave him that name, nobody knew about. And I've seen him go through a lot of stuff in the sense that when he started, he really didn't have much of a resume, and now he has built this incredible business, and he has managed to be no more annoying than he was at the beginning. He continues to be just as annoying as he ever was. And most of the crap storm that is about to be unleashed is going to fall on him. And the responsibility for the company is on him. And the responsibility for doing this is on him. And he did, as I will explain to you why I think this, he did what was right and what had to be done and what was definitely coming, and maybe some people felt he should have done it sooner. I know some people felt he should have done it sooner, but they're not watching what happens. It's, you know, this is a business, things move slowly, all kinds of obligations are in play. He did it when he could, when he felt it was right. And I have to say that I personally felt a weight taken off my shoulders, and I'm grateful to him, not just for doing this, but for being the person he has become over the course of what is a tremendous success. And like I said, I'm really proud of him. I'm grateful to him because I feel a personal weight taken off my shoulders that this has happened. And that is not a hit on Candace, a personal hit on Candace, which I will also talk about in a minute. But let me just say first that I know the big hit, the thing that is going to come from the right, the people who think that the attack we're going to get from the right, because who cares what attack we get from the left, they kill babies. We don't care what they think. But the big hit we're going to get from the right is free speech. And I want to explain this. I'm a big free speech advocate. I used to say there was a free speech purist, but that would be silly. Nobody's a free speech purist, but I'm a very, very strong supporter, not just of the First Amendment, but of the point of view that goes on behind the First Amendment. And this idea that we have canceled somebody for what they say is absurd on the face of it, and I will explain why. I can come in here and express any opinion I want. No one will ever tell me, don't say this, don't say that, or say this or say that. It just doesn't happen. But if I woke up one morning and I thought to myself, you know what? I've been saying abortion is bad, but really it's great. It is great. There's nothing I like better than sucking the brains out of children. In fact, we shouldn't just, you know, do it while they're in the womb. We should just do it all the, you know, wait till they're one or two when it's more fun because you can hear them screaming. You know, if that suddenly became my opinion, I couldn't bring it in here because the Daily Wire is not a phone company where anybody can talk. It's not a social media company that I think should let everybody express an opinion. It's essentially an online magazine. It is a journal that stands for something. And one of the things that it doesn't stand for is abortion. And I don't think anyone should come in here. I would quit. I would have to leave. I would have to go in and say, guys, you know, I've seen the light. Killing kids is great, and I can't do that anymore. So I would have to come in and say, as an honorable person, I'm going to remove this. That's something that we can't abide at the Daily Wire because it's not what we stand for. And the same is true of race hatred. And I said this once on Member Block, so a lot of you probably didn't hear it. My problem with race hatred is that it's bad thinking. And the way you know it's bad thinking, I mean, my problem with race hatred is religious. I think it's wrong. But the way you know it's wrong and you know it's bad thinking is it works no matter who you hate. If you figure out that the Jews are to blame for everything, or like the New York Times, you figure out that the whites are to blame for everything. You say it's the blacks, they're ruining everything. It always works. It always makes absolute sense out of everything. And that's because it actually doesn't make sense. It is filling in a lot of nuanced, difficult, detailed things that you have to think about, and it's just spreading this kind of smear of hate over it. And so it always puts things into perspective. Now, having said all this, I don't know what's in Candace Owens' mind. My relationship with Candace has been nothing but collegial and friendly. I would bump into her. I don't know her well, but I would bump into her in hair and makeup. We always greeted each other with pleasantness and friendliness. We always had pleasant little chats. I would see her backstage. I never felt that she wanted my opinion on her work. I never felt invited to give her my opinion on her work. And I am the sort of person who, if asked my opinion on anything, will give it absolutely and bluntly, but never give it when I'm not asked. Unless there's somebody standing on my toe, I'm not going to volunteer my opinion. So we were friendly, and I certainly have no reason to dislike her personally, and I don't dislike her personally. I've never had any meeting with her where I walked away feeling, wow, I don't like that person. It just didn't happen. And in fact, I felt a small investment in her because, as I have bragged repeatedly of any number of people, I have a weird knack for spotting broadcast talent. My father was a famous broadcaster, and so I just know it when I see it. I knew it when I saw it in Ben. I knew it when I saw it in Knowles, you know, that little bit of broadcast talent that he has. I spotted Candace when she was on a small YouTube station doing Blexit stuff, you know, blacks should get out of the Democrat Party stuff. I invited her on my show back when we were in the first office we had in LA, I believe. I had her on my show. She left. I walked down the hall to Jeremy's office. That was back before he had the throne room with the guys with the spears and all that stuff. And I walked down the hall and I said, if you want to bring a woman into this operation, I just met her because that's one of the most talented broadcasters I have ever met. And I would say it then and I would say it now. She is and remains an amazing talent, a person who radiates star quality and someone who just understands what the mic and the camera are all about in ways that I don't come close to. And I just truly admire and still admire what the amazing talent that she has. And by the way, Jeremy did not hire her when I said so. He may regret that because it cost him, you know, a lot of money to wait, but still, you know, I understood what she was the minute I saw her. I was on her show once or twice at the beginning, but I never listened to it. And the reason I never listened to it was because of all the stuff that I felt was silly. I mean, some of the stuff I felt I knew what she was going to say, which was the, you know, the Blexit stuff, which I'm all in favor of. But the stuff about the moon landing being fixed, you know, rigged, and 9/11 being an inside job, she would hint at. And recently there was Mrs. Macron, the first lady of France, is a man and all that. It's silly stuff. And the reason it's silly stuff is, one, it's not true. It's, you know, the amount of conspiracy it would take to fake the moon landing with nobody saying that it was fake is insane. And everything that sounds like science about it is ridiculous. It's not true. None of those things is true. 9/11 wasn't an inside job. The moon landing wasn't faked. Mrs. Macron has a daughter who looks just like her. She's not a man. But if they were true, Candace wouldn't know. And I wouldn't know because we don't have that kind of inside information. I don't care what people tell you. That's not the kind of thing that you know unless you are a top investigative reporter and can come up with the documents and show and prove the truth. But that's all that stuff is show business to me, you know? That's what she does. She has this enormous talent. That's her gift. She has a right to decide how to use it. None of my business. You know, she has a huge audience, I'm sure, still. And so I guess they like that stuff. It's nothing to me. It just doesn't mean anything to me. It's not the sort of thing I listen to. But that's the way she wanted to go with her talent. That's a choice that each person makes on his own or her own. And I am not privy in any way, shape, or form to her thinking. Then the juice stuff started. And here's what I want to say about this. And this is pretty much what I have to talk about because I don't want to attack her personally. I don't know what's on her mind and why she went down this road. I just don't know her that well. The left has made bigotry and hatred valuable by calling us bigots and calling us hateful when we tell the simple truth. So I say, you know, there's high crime in black neighborhoods, and the high crime is not because of slavery. It is because of fatherlessness, and it's because of a culture that's going on in certain black neighborhoods that is increasing. And the left says, oh, you're a racist. You're canceled. You stink, you know. Somebody says homosexuality is against my religion. Oh, you can't host the Oscars. You're out of work. I'm called to HR. A man can't become a woman. Oh, my God, you have phobia. That's a phobia to say a man can't become a woman. So the left has used the accusation of hatred and racism, bigotry and phobia to keep us from speaking the truth, which means that when somebody comes along and says something that violate that makes the left go crazy, it sounds like the truth. So I actually got sleep last night. This is true. One of the reasons is Beam Dream. Beam Dream contains a powerful all-natural blend of reishi, L-theanine, apigen, I don't care. And, oh, it's melatonin too, and that helps you fall asleep. Who cares what's in it? It helps you fall asleep and stay asleep and wake up refreshed. That's the important thing. It's not just your run-of-the-mill sleep aid either. It's a concoction carefully crafted to help you ease into the sweet embrace of rest without the grogginess that often accompanies other sleep remedies. Sleep is the foundation of our mental and physical health. That's why I look like this. You must have a consistent nighttime routine to function at your best. Today, my listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their best-selling hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Now available in delicious flavors like cinnamon cocoa, chocolate peanut butter, and mint chip. Better sleep has never tasted better. Just mix Beam Dream into hot water or milk, stir or froth with their cool machine, and enjoy before bedtime. If you find yourself battling the bedtime blues, give it a shot. Your weary self will thank you. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, take advantage of 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/Klavan and use code Klavan at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/Klavan with my promo code Klavan for up to 40% off your order. Now you can drift into sleep thinking, but how do you spell Klavan? It's K-L-A-V-A-N.
K-L-A-V-A-N, there are no easy things.
I'm somebody who says exactly what I mean. I have talked about crime in the black community and fatherlessness and the fact that I do not believe, that I believe the great society has more to do with black crime than anything that ever had to do with slavery. It's not anti-Semitic to attack George Soros. It's not anti-Semitic to disagree with Ben. It's not anti-Semitic to criticize Israel or to feel that America should not be supporting Israel or even to believe that the Palestinians have a case to make about the way they've been treated. I have even spoken about the fact that religions are thought processes that feed into modern thought processes. And I've spoken about the fact that secular Jews specifically are more drawn to materialist philosophy because Christians have treated them so badly over the years, they can't turn from their, as I did, turn from their Judaism to Christianity. So there's a lot of things that you can say that people accuse you, that are true, that people call racism. But you guys are smart people, right? And you know that people can use the truth to mask wickedness. You know this, right? The devil does it in the Bible, right? The devil comes up to Jesus to tempt Jesus, and he quotes scripture. He speaks the truth to mask evil, right? So if I'm the kind of brave conservative, which I am, who will sit and talk about high crime in black neighborhoods or criticize Soros, you know, without caring whether I'm called anti-Semitic or anything like that, and you're the kind of person who hates people because of the color of their skin or judges people according to the color of the skin, it's easy for you to blend in with me. Right? We're sitting around talking about high crime in black neighborhoods. You're sitting there going, yeah, the crime in black neighborhoods. But I'm not on your side. I am not on your side at all. I believe that God made us in his image, every single one of us. That is written down. That is scriptural truth. That is right there in the Bible. He made men and women in his image. It doesn't say he made white men. It doesn't say he made black men. It doesn't say anything. It just says men and women are made in God's image. I believe that 100%. I've said this before. I don't know why the left is against racism. Obviously, they're not. They hate white people. So, you know, whatever. They're just against, you know, not having power. That's all they're against. I'm against racism. I believe it's a sin. I believe it's a sin. And God didn't ask me how to make the world. I assume he doesn't want my, you know, opinion about it. And this is the world we're in, and people have different colors. They act in different ways. People of different races do have different cultures, come from different places. Maybe there's genetic components to it. I don't know. I just know. I don't know. That's not in the Bible. And I don't think we have enough science on it. But I just know they're all made in the image of God. And that's the end of the story. As far as I'm concerned, you come to me. I'm looking at you. I'm dealing with you. If you're a criminal, you're a criminal. If you're a good guy, you're a good guy. That's it. I care about the color of your hat, not the color of your skin. So Candace stood by her friend Kanye West when he started spouting crazy stuff about going DEFCON on the Jews. Fine. She has a mentally ill friend. She stood by him, you know, fine. You know, it was a little uncomfortable, but still, you know, so what? You know, she attacked this guy, Rabbi Shmuley. I will tell you, with all honesty, I don't even know who Rabbi Shmuley is. I have no idea. I didn't look him up. I haven't seen anything from him. You know, she's complaining about him. Fine. You don't like a rabbi? You're allowed not to like. You're allowed not to like Ben. You're allowed not to like anybody you don't like. If you can spell it out for me, what the problem is. But when you start saying things like some of those books Hitler burned weren't so bad, you know, I was shocked. This is something Candace actually said. I was surprised to learn that the books Hitler was burning or the Nazis were burning, they weren't good books. They were bad books. They were socialist books. So, you know, they burned. That's true. Burning the book is the act of a savage, first of all. And when you start with burning books, you start burning people. But they burned Joseph Conrad, one of my favorite writers, Kafka, Hemingway, Jack London, and yes, some socialists, some of whom were extremely talented and some of whom were extremely interesting, like Karl Marx is an extremely interesting writer with whom I deeply, deeply disagree, but I don't burn his books because I'm not a savage. When you start saying that, that's a dog whistle. I'm sorry. I know it's a leftist phrase. I know they use it, you know, randomly with anything you say. I understand all of that. Still, the depredations of the Nazis against the Jews are one of the most well-documented, recorded atrocities in human history because they're Germans. They're Germans. They keep records. They keep very good records. We know these things happen. They weren't burning books. You know, they also hated Einstein because his science was Jewish science. They hated Mendelssohn, one of their great composers, because his music was Jewish music. That's the way they thought. It's lunacy. It's lunacy to think that way. So when you start to say, well, you know, some of those books they burned are, you know, were bad books, I'm sorry. That's a dog whistle. When you retweet a post saying a Jew is drunk on Christian blood, which goes back, as I'm sure you know, to old blood libel that you know, Jews eat Christian children, you know, that's a dog whistle. When you start to refer in this kind of clever way to certain group of people in Hollywood corrupting blacks and killing Michael Jackson, you're not allowed to then put on an innocent look and say, well, I'm just saying there's certain people, just a few, you know, I'm just saying, you know, you're messing with us. You're messing with us, and everyone knows it, and no one is fooled except those people who want to pretend to be fooled because they hate the Jews. The biggest truth that Candace told in that way, that I find, again, and this is not personal animus toward her, but I find difficult to excuse this when anybody does it, the truth that hid wickedness that I thought was the most wicked truth to use was the truth that Christ is king. It is almost exactly 20 years since I acknowledged the kingship of Christ in my life and over the universe as well. It's like 2 weeks and it'll be 20 years since my baptism. It was hard for me to do. I'm a proud man and I want to be king. I want to be in charge of my life. I want to take credit for the good things that happened to me. I want to say, you know, what my opinion is about right and wrong. I don't want to bend the knee to anybody. And people who know me will tell you, I don't bend the knee to anybody except Christ the King. And the day I took off my paper crown and bowed my knee before his crown of golden light, I became a true man and a free man. And the joy in my heart has only grown. You know, when I did this, by the way, the priest who baptized me said, you know, Christians won't accept you. You'll still be a Jew. And I said, well, I am. That's my race. I'm a Jew. I'm proud of my race. It's a great race. It's done many, many great things, including write the Bible. And, you know, I am a Jew. But that hasn't happened at all. Christians have welcomed me with open arms, except this Christ the King anti-Semitic crowd. Christ is the King. And one day, every knee will bow and recognize it, because he's not just my king, he's king of the universe. But when you use that phrase to mean that God has abandoned his chosen people, the Jews, through whom he came into this world incarnate, and that he's broken his promises, his covenant with the Jews, you are quoting scripture like Satan does in the Bible. You are quoting scripture to your purposes, and that to me is specifically wicked. You know, when you spit that phrase at Ben Shapiro, my friend Ben Shapiro, and you know, I understand this. All of you who love Ben, and I love Ben, and Jordan Peterson, you all want to see them find Jesus, because you know what joy and freedom that gives you, and you certainly feel that it alters your relationship with God. But when I think about this, to be honest with you, you know, and I know some people will disagree with this, but life is not a game show where you guess the name of God and you get to go to heaven. Honk, you know, yes, the name is Jesus. I look at Ben's life and I think if Ben were to embrace Jesus Christ, it would cause devastation to his family, to the people who love him, to the people who listen to him, to his position in the world. I just have this feeling that God has put this guy where he wants him to do what he wants him to do. And as you know, I feel that, you know, the Jews were not abandoned by God. I feel the same way about Jordan. Jordan struggles with this stuff, and I feel like I have an inkling of why he has to struggle with it, but his struggle is inspiring to other people. And I think God wants his boys where he's got them, and there's no thought in my mind that he is going to send these guys into battle and then turn his back on them when they come marching home. It's not a game show. You know, Christ is love, Christ is truth, Christ is the logos of the moral order. You follow love, you follow truth, you follow the moral order. You will find yourself ultimately at Jesus Christ's door. I don't worry about Ben and Jordan Peterson one little bit. And so when you spit Christ the King at them to insist that they have been rejected by the one who sent them to do the work that they're doing, no. Now, that just doesn't sit with me in the least. So I actually got some sleep last night, so I missed my Helix mattress. Gratitude fills my heart when I reflect on the sheer luxury of a good night's sleep. That's the first I've gotten in years. My Helix mattress isn't just a piece of furniture. It's a cocoon of comfort that cradles me to sleep. Usually I enjoy it because I'm lying awake, but last night I was sleeping and it was even better. Helix harnesses years of mattress expertise to offer a truly elevated sleep experience. The Helix Elite Collection includes 6 different mattress models, each tailored for specific sleep positions and firmness preferences. If you're worried about buying a mattress online, you don't have to be. Helix has you covered with a unique sleep quiz that customizes your mattress based on your body type and sleep preferences. No more generic mattresses made for someone else. I took the Helix quiz. I was matched with a firm but breathable mattress. I love this mattress, and I'm confident that you'll love yours too. Plus, Helix has a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. Helix's financing options and flexible payment plans ensure a great night's sleep is never far away. Helix is offering my listeners 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows. Go to helixsleep.com/Klavan. That's helixsleep.com/Klavan. This is your best offer yet, and it won't last long with Helix. Better sleep starts with knowing how to spell Klavan, K-L-A-V-A-N.
K-L-A-V-A-N, there are no easy.
Now, because we're all made in God's image, all race hatred is against my religion. I really feel it's a sin against the image of God, because what you're saying is, God, you put that image in the wrong body. You put that image in the wrong race. You gave that image a black face. I don't like those black faces, you know that. And I don't say those things to God because I'm afraid he'll kill me, you know, and also because I know it's wrong, all right? But yes, there is something special and especially wicked about the hatred of Jews, and I will tell you why. It's not worse than other things. It's just special. It is different, and it's central to everything that we love. The hatred of Jews is a hatred of everything that we love, and it comes in disguise. Did you ever wonder why Europe exterminated itself with the Holocaust against the Jews? Why was that the end of Europe? 2/3 of Europe's Jews, 2 out of every 3 Jews, was murdered in World War II, some killed in bombing and things like that, but many, many, many of them simply just gassed, murdered. So if the Jews were the problem with Europe, you'd think Europe would thrive afterwards, right? They got off rid of the majority of their Jews. Everything should go great now. But in fact, no. What happened was Europe, the greatest civilization that has ever existed on the face of the earth, ever dwindled to the little nothing that it is now. Here's what I believe, and I think it's provable. I think all the documentation shows it. Christianity swept over the German tribes of Europe, the Franks and the Anglo-Saxons and the Germans. All those tribes were Christianized by this, and it imposed on them a morality that held up the love of the poor, the love of women and the rights of women, the rights of individuals, and a kind of more charitable morality. It imposed it on a bunch of savage tribes, That moral system was not just written by Jesus because he's the Son of God. It's also his human patrimony because he was the child of Jews. That is a Jewish morality. Now, is it transformed by Jesus? Does Jesus shine a light back on it that changes it in some ways? Yes, absolutely. But that morality was an essentially Jewish morality. And when they talk about the Judeo-Christian tradition, that's a real thing. I understand the differences and all that, but there is this real tradition of care for the poor, of love for your enemies, of kind treatment to the stranger and all these things. That colonized the minds of these German tribes. You know, people talk about the fact, we stole the solstice tree and turned it into a Christmas tree. That ain't all Christianity did. It totally transformed the culture of those tribes. And every time they wanted to get free of it, they blamed that culture. They couldn't blame Christ because they were all Christians now. They blamed that imposition on the Jews. There's a reason that so many Germans, like Nietzsche, took off against Christianity and the Jews at the same time. Nietzsche called Christianity a slave morality, right? Because that savage part of him, that part that was still out there in the jungles of Europe, was thinking, no, I don't have to be nice. Why should the losers win? We need an Übermensch. We need supermen. We need strong men to take over and proclaim what morality is. Not just love your neighbor stuff, just love your enemy stuff. Schopenhauer, another German philosopher, great German philosopher, said Christianity almost got it right, but the Jews ruined it. The Jews ruined Christianity. Christianity was in conflict in the consciousness of these people with that pre-Christian tribal Germanic ethos. That's why Richard Wagner, right, the great opera writer, he wanted to recreate a pagan German mythology that went back to the Aryan core of the German identity. He hated the Jews with a passion close to madness. Under Hitler, the guy who was burning all those bad, bad books, that funny guy, that funny little guy who wasn't any, you don't hate Hitler. Why should you hate it if you're a Christian? He was just going after those Jews. He had a guy who was the minister of church affairs named Hans Kerl. And this is what Hans Kerl said. He said, God's will, this is the guy who runs the churches in Nazi Germany, reveals itself in German blood. The church has tried to make it clear to me that Christianity consists in faith in Christ as the Son of God. That makes me laugh. True Christianity is represented by the Nazi Party and especially by the Führer, the herald of a new revelation. Well, it was not a new revelation. It was the old revelation, the revelation that had been swept away by Christianity. The Nazis weren't going forward in Christ. They were running away from Christ, running back to the forest where Christ found them. Jew hatred. I've said this a million times, and I'm trying to explain why I say it. Jew hatred is Christ hatred in disguise. Jew hatred is the hatred of Christ in disguise. Listen to what they say. They don't just say Christ is king. The Christ they describe is a pre-Christian Christ, a pagan Christ. And I'm not talking about polite anti-Semitism. We all hate each other. I get that. I don't want you in my club because you have a funny nose or you're black or, you talk in the movies, whatever. There's all kinds of polite bigotry. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that thing where you use the word Jew as a pejorative, as an insult, where you sit around. No one ever says No one ever says, oh, an Irishman cares about Ireland, so he's a bad guy. You know, Michael Knowles talks about the Pope, so he, you know, he's not loyal to America. But the fact that Ben loves Israel and is deeply, deeply concerned at this moment of existential threat, that makes him, that means he doesn't love America, right? It's always, the Jews are special in this way. And when they use that word, the Jews killed Christ, as if that meant, you know, whenever you hear that in the Bible, in the Gospel of John, that means the religious leadership of the time. It doesn't mean the people. When you hear that and when they all get lumped together, you are listening to Christ hatred, to God hatred. So when Jeremy Boring, a Christian man, has to sign a check, a big check, to pay someone to talk about Hitler wasn't so bad in burning books, or a Jew is choking on Christian blood, or Christ is king. When Jeremy Boring has to sign that check, he's doing something that he cannot abide. He cannot abide it. It's not because Ben is his friend. I know Ben is a friend, and he loves Ben, and we all love Ben, you know, and I understand that. But that's not why he can't abide it. He's people say things, including me, people say things on this outlet all the time that Ben doesn't like and Ben disagrees with. But Jeremy signs their checks and doesn't stop them. This is too far, not because of Ben, but because of what it really means. It's really this hatred of Jews, this level of hatred of Jews, is a hatred of God, a hatred of Christ. It's a hatred of Jesus Christ. I know they say, oh no, it's because the Jews, you know, Nick Fuentes, he says, the Jews' religion is based on rejecting Christ. That's crap. The Jews were around for a long time before they were prepared to bring Christ into the world. That is not what defines the Jewish religion. When I, who have given my life to Christ, who have bowed to Christ as I have bowed to nothing else on this planet, who bends the knee before Christ the King, and I come on this outlet, which I was at from the very beginning, which I helped to build, this outlet that I love, I admit it, I love this place, and I know that such things are being said under the aegis of the Daily Wire. It has to end. It has to stop. You know, it's just the same. It's just the same as if someone supported abortion, right? No matter what price we pay for it, no matter what crap we take for it, no matter what they call us, and they're going to call us everything, if Candace wants to say those things about the Jews, about Hitler, no matter how she dodges and weaves, she has to leave the Daily Wire. She has to leave for one reason above every other. There are lots of reasons, but the one reason she has to leave above every other is because Christ is King. We cannot let him be defamed. Even if they call him the Jews, we cannot let Christ be defamed at this place because Christ is King. Whether you have 3 minutes in the morning or 30 minutes with Genucel, you can keep your face wrinkle-free. Not sure which product is for you? A great place to start is with Gen 90, the new instant wrinkle treatment from Genucel. Gen 90 instantly reduces wrinkles anywhere you use it, around the eyes, laugh lines, and even chin. It starts working in seconds. You'll never worry about your skin or your confidence again. Genucel's technology is luxurious, nourishing, silky smooth. There's a reason why Genucel has 400 times the customer loyalty of other skincare brands. And it just gets better. Genucel's XV is a collagen builder moisturizer with vitamin C and hyaluronic acid in a pure natural base for stunning results day after day. Right now, both Gen 90 and XV are included in their best-selling package on sale now. Make your fine lines and wrinkles disappear wherever they are before you even leave the house. Order right now at genucel.com/Klavan and get a free spa box with two luxury skincare essentials and free shipping. Hurry before they sell out at genucel.com/Klavan. First, you got to pause to learn how to spell Klavan. It's K-L-A-V-A-N. No E's.
There are no E's in Klavan.
All right. Well, that's what I have to say about that, as Forrest Gump would say. I aspire to the level of intelligence of Forrest Gump. And this is... my show is now misshapen, right? I take a lot of care shaping these shows, and now that's all out of whack. So I'll just talk about a couple of things for the rest of the show. What I wanted to talk about, what I want to lead off with before I realized I was going to have to address this, is this year's World Happiness Report came out. And this is a report. It's a partnership of Gallup, the Oxford Wellbeing Research Center, and a UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network. And they bring it out every year, and they go out and they ask about 1,000 people, I think, in each country whether they're happy. And this year, for the first time, the United States fell out of the top 20 people, mostly because our young people are severely unhappy. And I'll be talking later on, as I said, with Abigail Schreier, who's written this book about bad therapy, who makes some suggestions about why our young people are so unhappy. But this goes along with the fact that, by the way, I was looking at this, and I'm sure the survey was probably taken before October 7th, but the young people in Israel are number two in happiness, right? Because number one, I think, Latvia, I think, was number one, and number two, the young people in Israel are the happiest. And there's a country that's constantly under existential threat, but they believe in something, and the threat hones them and grounds them to reality. Now, the report doesn't ask people much about why they're happy, which means that each news outlet, and I looked up a bunch of the story in a bunch of different news outlets, each one reports the prejudice of the news outlet, right? So that the left says, well, they're not happy because these other countries like Finland, which is always listed among the happiest places, oh, who could tell? It's so dark there. But Finland is always listed as among the happiest places. They say, well, a lot of government services. They have a lot of government services. Yeah, that's true. But it's also true they're a kind of, you know, homogenized, if that's the word I want. You know, they have a lot of homogeneity in their culture, and maybe that's it. So you don't know. So everybody imposes the reason people are happy on them. You know, on the conservatives, they'll say, well, it's marriage and sex and all this stuff. And because happiness is self-reported, we don't even know how accurate this is. And the funny thing is, at any given moment, you're unhappy, right? At any given moment, I was just, Abigail Schreier writes about this too. At any given moment, you're worried about what's happening, your job, whether I'm going to get this right. Can I do this thing now? I don't have my show map in front of me. Can I actually do this show? You know, you're always worried about something. So it's really hard to know whether a country is happy or not. But we know that the deaths of despair, especially among middle-aged white men, have skyrocketed. With deaths of despair, or what they call drug use and suicide and alcohol use and all this stuff, went down a little bit, those drug deaths of despair during the Trump administration when jobs became plentiful. But of course, they've gone back up over this. But so I'm very wary when I read about the reports on this, why people are unhappy. You know, people in this business are ambitious people, and they want you to get what you want. You are paying for the product, which is me talking, which is our opinions. And so we want to give you the opinions that make you want to pay for them. And the opinions that make you want to pay for them are the opinions that you agree with. And so that's why you hear a lot of people confirming your opinions on TV, because they want you to love it. I'm the exception because, as you know, I'm on a mission from God. And I want you to love me, but because I love you, I feel that I have to really tell you what I believe to be the truth. And it's not that offensive, actually. We are in a weird, weird situation in this country. Have you ever had a friend who's either been through or is going through some tremendous, traumatic situation, like death or a divorce, or, you know, their spouse cheated on them, or they've been assaulted in some way, and they're talking to you about how unhappy they are, but they can't figure out why? You've probably seen that thing. I think I brought in a little piece of it. Yeah, the girl with the nail in her head, right? There's a girl talking to her boyfriend, and she has a nail stuck in her forehead. Play this.
It's just, there's all this pressure, you know? And sometimes it feels like it's right up on me, and I can just feel it, like literally feel it in my head, and it's relentless, and I don't know if it's going to stop. I mean, that's the thing that scares me the most, is that I don't know if it's ever going to stop.
Yeah. Well, you do have a nail in your head.
It is not about the nail.
Are you sure? Because, I mean, I'll bet if we got that out of there...
Stop trying to fix it.
No, I'm not trying to fix it. I'm just pointing out that maybe the nail is causing...
You always do this.
I love that. I think it's a hilarious video. Stop trying to fix it is my favorite line. I always say, you know, to my wife, if you want somebody to listen to your problems and not fix them, talk to your girlfriends. Mrs. Hot Gandalf loves when I say that. Right this minute, this is true. People don't want to talk about the pandemic. And when people you know, in the business talk to you. They say, don't talk about the pandemic because you will lose audience. People will tune you out. They don't want to hear it. It was traumatic. They want to leave it behind. It's gone. It's finished. It's over. But here's the thing, okay? There's a book, one of my favorite. I love this book by Winston Churchill. It's called My Early Life. They sometimes publish it as Young Winston because they made it into a kind of second-rate movie. The book, though, is great. That guy, every single thing that could happen to somebody happened to him in his young life. He was in the last major cavalry charge at, I think it was called Omdurman. He was fighting the Mas, the Islamist threat there. And he had to escape from prison under gunfire. It's just an amazing, amazing story. But one of the things he says, and I'm quoting from memory because I couldn't find the book on my shelf, but one of the things he talks about is that he was at the highest levels of the British government and of the European government. And he says he was at parties with all the great leaders of Europe before World War I. And he was at parties with all the great leaders of Europe after World War I. And they were all different people. They were all different leaders. Why? Because they had destroyed their civilization. World War I was the beginning of the end of Europe. Europe's great civilization was 1500 with the Reformation to 1914, and then it was done. It was just World War I, then World War II, then Europe was a memory. That civilization was gone. No Sistine Chapels coming out of Europe, no Shakespeare coming out of Europe after World War II. And that was because of the decisions people made to wander into this meaningless, useless war with the idea that it was going to be over in a couple of weeks and a generation of men was wiped out, and that was something that they could just never recover from. And of course, Germany was forced into penury, and the penuries made them think that Hitler would be a great idea, and World War II destroyed them all. The greatest civilization in human history gone because of bad, stupid, useless decisions. When leadership screws up at that titanic level, what do? You toss them out. There should be consequences. Well, not so much. When people talk about the pandemic now, when they talk about, oh, this happened because of the pandemic, that happened because of the pandemic, they're not talking about the pandemic. They are talking about the greatest screw-up by Western leadership since World War I. Trump, I'm sorry, but he was part of it. Biden, Fauci, Macron in France, the Tory party in Brooklyn, Merkel's successor in Germany. Not only, these are the same people, not only do they still hold power, their reputations among their supporters are completely intact. Here's the blog father, Glenn Reynolds. You ever read Instapundit, his wonderful blog? He was one of the earliest great bloggers. And Glenn now writes sometimes for the New York Post. He says, the architects of the disastrous policies, figures like Fauci, Francis Collins, and Deborah Birx, escaped any reckoning. Politicians like Cuomo, Pelosi, and California Governor Gavin Newsom cheerfully flouted the rules they imposed on the little people, going to dinner parties and otherwise cavorting in defiance of social distancing and mask mandates. As left-leaning blogger Nate Silver observed, it's kind of crazy and tells you a lot about who was writing the restrictions, that churches in some jurisdictions were subject to more restrictions than museums, not just museums, and liquor stores and strip joints. The final blow came when public health experts, quote unquote, who had been condemning family Sunday dinners as inconsistently dangerous, did a 180 and endorsed massive Black Lives Matter protests on the specious ground that racism is a public health problem. Glenn says if there can't be any punishment, and in today's America, the very idea of consequences for the nomenclatura runs the risk of being called white supremacist or insurrectionist, there can at least be remembrance. The expert class blew it, sold out, or gloried in putting people under its thumb. And I would go much, much further than that. The expert class, the leadership class, the political class took everything from us. They took everything. They turned a roaring Trump economy into a mess. They stripped us of our freedoms, of our worship. They let our cities burn to the ground over the death of a thug resisting arrest. Our media lied to us and told us that the protests were mostly peaceful. Our scientists lied to us, told us we should wear masks that didn't do anything, get a vaccine that wasn't good for younger people. They stripped us of free speech in their line still. And I'm against political violence almost always, and I'm speaking here metaphorically, but under what moral system should these people not be, metaphorically, tarred and feathered and thrown into the clavenless darkness where there is great wailing and gnashing of teeth? And I'm not talking about one or two of these bastards. I mean all you all. You should go. You should be gone. There's an article in the Claremont Review of Books, which I think you can find online, by our friend Jeffrey Anderson of the American Main Street Initiative. I do an interview with him called COVID Catastrophes. I highly recommend this article. It is too long for me to really quote it at length, but it is the best description of the failures that happened without getting crazy about them, without the Twitter stuff, like everybody's going to die from the vaccine and all that stuff. But he's very, very specific. He is a good number man, and he understands where the threats are, where the damage was, and it's really good. COVID Catastrophes in the Claremont Review of Books. It just starts, I just to read the first paragraph. He says, it's still hard to believe that Americans recently lived through a period in which executive officials with no legislative involvement ordered churches, shops, and schools to be closed, forced Americans to hide their faces behind masks, and even demanded that they be fired for not taking experimental vaccines. Yet that was life in America, at least in many states. Why are people unhappy now? Why are people unhappy now? Imagine being a young person, looking at these people who lied to you, who stole everything from you, who stole your college years from you. They stole your college years from you. Or if you're older and your parents, they stole your children's education from you for no reason, simply because they were incompetent and got a taste of power. And like some kind of wolf getting a taste of blood, they became man-eaters. They became destructors. It is absolutely amazing. And, you know, I will say this for Trump. His instincts were right, but he let this class, this expert class, take over. I have friends. Our pal, we brought him on the show, Clifton Duncan. He was on his way to Broadway. He was a really talented stage actor. He had been on Broadway, and he'd been on good off-Broadway things. He can't work because he didn't take the vaccine, because he won't take the vaccine, because he's a young man and he shouldn't take the vaccine. Unbelievable stuff. You couldn't go to a Trump rally. You could go to a riot. None of this was COVID. COVID was a disease, is a disease. It's a flu. If you're 80, you die. If you're fat, you die. If you have some other disease, you die. Otherwise, you feel bad and then you get better. I mean, that was why they did all this. And now we look around at these people and these structures, and they're still there. They're still there. They're still in office. They're still in their appointed offices. They're still giving interviews on CNN to the people on CNN who lied. They're still doing it. It's insane. It is insane. You know, they had this case, Murthy v. Missouri, where a bunch of states sued the Biden administration for arm-twisting social media to take down COVID posts, which went against the regime's dictums, but were mostly true. And the Supreme Court seems like they were kind of skeptical that this should, that the government should be stopped from doing this. And my feeling was, I thought these people, their souls look like Elephant Man looked like physically. They are the Elephant Men of souls. They are just deformed, corrupt, empty, empty people. You know, there was Bobulinski, Tony Bobulinski, the guy who was involved with the Biden crime family, was testifying before the House Oversight Committee, and he just was describing how the Biden family, including Joe, were getting money from a Chinese energy company that was essentially the Chinese Communist Party in disguise. And the Democrats are yelling at him, and they're calling him names and all this stuff. And this is a good guy, a veteran, a guy with a great military record. And one of the things that struck me about this, and suddenly it was headlines, at least in the Wall Street Journal, also in the New York Times, I think they reported it. But a lot of the networks didn't. They dumped it. But I was thinking, you know, I have my problems with where Tucker Carlson has gone after leaving Fox. I don't think he's going down a very good road either. But he interviewed Bobulinski. I watched him. I think he gave him 2 nights, as I remember. And I watched him and I thought, oh my God, these guys are in debt to the Chinese Communist Party. And, you know, there was an article in ProPublica. Let me just make sure I give them credit. ProPublica. By Sebastian Rotella and Kirsten Berg and Garrett Yalch and Clifton Adcock of The Frontier. And this article starts out in 2022 with a massacre in an Oklahoma marijuana farm that is run, as so many of them are, by the Chinese mafia. And the Chinese mafia is so powerful that they basically said, well, you can't get rid of us because the entire economy of Oklahoma will crash. But they're not just, haven't just taken control of the marijuana industry off the books, not the legal one, though they're using the legal means to do it. They are also laundering money for the Mexican cartels who control the border. Okay. So now we know that Joe Biden and the Biden crime family were taking money, they were taking bribes, and this is what Bob Alinsky calls them. He says these were bribes from the Chinese Communist Party. And when he found out about it, when he realized what it was, he got out and they told him, you know, don't worry, we have plausible deniability. He said, no, I'm out of here. Joe Biden is taking money from the Chinese. The Chinese are laundering money for the Mexicans. The Mexicans are controlling our borders, which the Biden administration is fighting in court to keep open, to make sure Texas doesn't close the borders. We saw last night, I saw a video of illegals charging, tearing down the fence, knocking aside our patrolmen to get into the country illegally. Biden is suing Texas to make sure they don't stop them. Nothing to see here, folks. Nothing to see here. People in this country, young people in this country are unhappy. They should be unhappy, and they should turn on these people any way they can, legally, peacefully, but get rid of them. These guys destroyed their lives and have paid nothing for it. Now, here's something I actually take every single day. Balance of Nature fruits and veggies. It's the most convenient way to get whole food ingredients daily, like the kind of vegetables that actually count. Balance of Nature uses an advanced cold vacuum process that encapsulates fruits and vegetables into whole food supplements without sacrificing their natural antioxidants. The capsules are completely void of additives, fillers, extracts, synthetics, pesticides, or added sugar. The only thing in Balance of Nature's fruit and veggie capsules is fruits and veggies. Balance of Nature helps our bodies obtain the necessary nutrients for proper functioning. Replacing deficient nutrients can increase energy levels and provide other health benefits. Imagine trying to eat 31 different fruits and vegetables every day. That sounds miserable and time-consuming. With Balance of Nature, there's never been an easier way to ensure you get your daily fruits and vegetables. Go to balanceofnature.com, use promo code Klavan to get 35% off your first set of fruits and veggies and an additional $10 off every additional set you buy. That's balanceofnature.com, promo code Klavan. Every time you take one, you can think, I am taking the same thing as K-L-A-V-A-N.
There are no easy things.
Ladies and gentlemen, behold, the iconic leftist tears tumbler is back and sending shivers down the spines of woke baristas everywhere. But wait, because there's a twist. It's yours for free when you become a Daily Wire Plus annual member. Now, I know what you're thinking. Membership? But I just want the legendary leftist tears tumbler. Sure, unlimited access to ad-free, uncensored shows from the Daily Wire hosts you love is great. Having hit movies, series, and groundbreaking documentaries on demand is awesome. But what you've really been waiting for is the leftist tears tumbler, and now it's yours for free with an insider annual membership. You want more? New all-access members get two leftist tears tumblers free. That's right, double the cred, double the liberal meltdowns. Become an annual member today at dailywireplus.com for your iconic leftist tears tumbler and drink to triggering the left. Klavan clapbacks.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it.
Yeah!
All right. Hey, Andrew. From Roshan, I think is how to pronounce it. Love your show and you for your wit, love of God, love of art, and honesty. I know you believe in Matthew 7:1, judge not, and I'm sure people give you tons of flack for it. I would say that's fair. I know that seems incontrovertible, but how do you square that with John 7:24, judge not according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment? Actually, that's not a problem. That quote, Jesus is talking about judgment of a very different kind. He's talking about looking at something and judging what it is you're seeing, and whether it's right or wrong, which is absolutely essential and necessary. And he's saying you want to judge right or wrong. The more difficult passage, there is a more difficult passage in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, which is Paul writing about a case of incest in the church and saying, He's saying you got to get rid of this person. And he says, you must not associate with anyone who claims to be a brother or sister, but is sexually immoral or greedy, an idolater or slanderer or drunkard or swindler. Do not even eat with such people. What business is it of mine to judge those outside the church? Are you not to judge those inside? God will judge those outside, but expel the wicked person from among you. And I wrote a letter, you know, Spencer Clavin, no relation, and I have this Substack called The New Jerusalem, where we're trading letters about believing in God and this kind of technological moment of transhumanism, approaching transhumanism. And I wrote about this, and you know, people hate it when you say, well, Paul is not Jesus, because they think you're dismissing Paul, and that's not true. I'm not dismissing Paul, but Paul is not Jesus, and he has a different role to play. And Jesus comes to save, as C.S. Lewis says, he comes to save each man. He comes to save each man. He says, judge not, lest you be judged. In other words, judge people the way you want God to judge you, which is, for me, is like not, a, you know, really, really mercifully. that's what he means by it, like totally, totally mercifully. But Paul is assigned to build a church that has to represent the word of God, which is a different role. I don't have that role. My only role is to find the God within me. And so if I err, I'm going to err on the side of love. You know, there's that wonderful, wonderful story that they've actually tried and have succeeded in some places of taking it out of the Bible because it's not in the earliest parts of the New Testament, but it's so obviously Christ speaking that I don't know how they can get rid of it, which is when they bring the woman taken in adultery before Jesus Christ. And he says, let anyone, they want to stone her. And he says, let anyone who is without sin throw the first stone, and everybody goes home, the older people first, interestingly enough. And then Jesus says to the woman, was there no one left to judge you? And she says, no. And he says, well, then I don't judge you either. Go and sin no more. And that's really interesting because Jesus has many times mentioned adultery as one of the things you must not do if you want to get into the kingdom of heaven. But he says, I will not judge you. Now, people hear that, and I've just noticed this again and again, is that what progressives hear is, I will not judge you, and what conservatives hear is, go and sin no more. And each one remembers the one they want to hear. But Jesus somehow brings those together, and that's really, really difficult to do. We shouldn't think that that's like just, oh yeah, you know, and Jesus can do it. If he can do it, I so can I. That's not a good way of thinking. So, you know, I understand the difficulty of that, but I don't run a church. I'm not a pastor. I'm not here to make sure that the church, you know, works. I go to a church that is as close to a church in keeping with my values as I can find. And you know, that's my job. My job is to go to church and pray and love people and love God. That's what I do. And so it's not as big a difficulty for me, but I understand the difficulty. I'm not dismissing it. I'm just saying that Paul is not doing what Christ is doing. Christ is saving mankind and each man and each woman. And Paul is building a church to bring that good news to the people, which is different. All right, become a member today, or else what's going to happen to you is going to happen to you right now, which I'm going to go to member block and you're going to be left behind in the Clavenless darkness. So go to dailywire.com/subscribe, use code Claven at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans, and hold that Clavenless darkness off as long as you can.